Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast. I can't do it outside. Welcome to the Physics Teaching Podcast Outside Broadcasting Unit. The podcast for teachers of physics, made by physics teachers.
I was about to do that socially distanced from over there, about 2 metres away. These teachers like me, Robin Griffiths, a full-time teacher of physics all the way from year 8 through to year 13.
And physics teachers like me, Thomas WP, a part-time A-level, mostly, teacher of physics. And here we are in a beautiful copse on a lovely sunny day, obeying appropriate social distancing, and both mulling over our memories of the dearly departed Reverend Tim Hardingham, who we were devastated to lose a week ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim was a friend and mentor to us, but as the immediate kind of shock that came in the wake of his death, as that subsides, the wonderful memories of him keep going. And I've been contacted with so many physics teachers whose lives Tim touched and whose careers Tim touched, and all of them devastated, but all of them saying how much he influenced their teaching. And so in that sense, Tim will live on through generations to come.
Yeah, and he was killed by a fast-moving car, I think. And we were discussing a letter in the local press saying how Tim would be very sympathetic and empathetic and concerned about the driver of that car, a 20-year-old male. And that, you know, that is the measure of the man. He was just the most calm, peaceful, gentle man, and we will miss him tremendously.
Yeah, I think we all need to, and that was what I said in my obituary, I think we all need to be a bit more Tim, and that sort of sense of his level of forgiveness and his compassion for his fellow teachers and for his fellow human beings and for his students was what set him apart. And so if that's a lesson we could all take from his life, then that would be a good positive thing.
And without further ado, I think he would want us just to press on and enjoy spreading the joy of teaching physics. And we, before Tim passed away, we recorded a very interesting interview with Ariel Paul, who works at the University of Colorado. And I'm not sure of his exact job title, and because I'm not sat in front of my computer, I'm stood in a copse in the middle of rural Essex, I can't look it up very quickly. He is certainly, I think his communications, he certainly runs the Twitter for the amazing, the wonderful FET, PHET. Oops. Now I'm back in front of a computer, I can say that Ariel is the Director of Development for the FET Interactive Simulations Project. So sorry about that, Ariel, and back to us standing in a copse on a glorious day in rural Essex.
Yeah, absolutely. FET is an institution, and if you haven't come across it before, if you just type PHET into Google, it will immediately send you towards the University of Colorado's FET site. And Ariel was saying that during the lockdown, and you'll hear this in the interview, that the sheer number of downloads of FET has rocketed as people have had to move to online. And it basically provides a way of people accessing some demos, some demos and simulations of practical work in the lab. And so therefore has been invaluable when people have been stuck away at home behind their computers. And of course, it's a hugely useful resource in teaching at the best of times. But in the last year or so, it's been absolutely invaluable.
Yeah, as Ariel says in the interview, he really doesn't want it to replace practical work and demonstrations. But certainly I've used FET for years to support practical work and support home learning as well. So if you set a circuit for them to solve, they can just go on and build that circuit and check the results are right. I think that is such a powerful thing. And Ariel does say the most popular simulation is the circuits one.
Indeed, and that's one I use. I tend to set revision tasks on that, because revision can tend to be a bit book-based and a bit dry. So if you send your students to FET for revision of circuits, it reminds them that whole idea of how current, voltage and resistance all interplay, and the circuits demo is fantastic for revision.
And before we go into the interview, I'll just tell you a bit about John Travoltage, because he mentions that. If you haven't been on FET and tried out John Travoltage, it's a little guy who looks exactly like John Travolta, funnily enough. It's weird that. And he rubs his foot on the carpet and he touches the doorknob and goes, "Oh!" So do go and look at that. I think that was the first ever one. So we'll play the interview with Ariel and then we'll just have a chat afterwards. Welcome to the podcast, Ariel Paul.
Thank you. How are you guys today?
We're very good indeed. So Ariel, just for the listeners' sake, would you like to introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what it is that you do? I think they'll be excited.
Yeah, you know, I think the best description that was ever given out on Twitter was, we are STEM wizards that work in the mountains of Colorado creating inventive ways to teach physics and maths to students around the world. But my personal background, I'm sort of a University of Colorado Boulder lifer these days, if you will. I got my PhD from the University of Colorado in 2007 in experimental laser physics. And then I actually spent a good chunk of time working as an apprentice in an instrument shop on campus, helping to design and build experiments for physicists in the World Renowned Institute of Jilla. And then a postdoc position opened at FET that I was quite interested in. So I started at FET in 2011 as a postdoc and have been at the project ever since, have moved into the position of the director of development, which really means director of development of the simulations we produce, helping to oversee the design, development, and quality assurance of the simulations.
So it sounds like FET is quite a big organization then. So how big is the operation, and what is it beyond the simulations?
It is a big operation, but with a small number of people that wear an enormous number of hats, as I'm sure you know as teachers, you're not familiar with at all. joking, of course. The organization itself, in terms of full-time employees, is around 15, but we have a lot of collaborators, a lot of sort of auxiliary employees, and we have people we work with around the globe. So we have about, you know, a large bulk of our staff is obviously on the development side. So we have, you know, somewhere in the range of 9 or 10 full-time software developers. Sometimes we have interns. We have a web developer that helps maintain our website. We have some back-end people we consult with for server work. We have a number of designers. And one piece of the project you may not be as aware of is a large part of our research recently has been in the area of accessibility. So for instance, for students who may have certain disabilities, whether that's allowing them to use keyboard navigation with the simulations, having a described experience instead of a visual experience with the simulation, having a sonified or sound experience with the simulation, looking into pieces like haptics. That is not my area of expertise. A wonderful member of our project, Dr. Emily Moore, leads that part of our research. But that is another piece of the project, if you will, that's kind of behind the curtain for some people and is a newer piece of the project that maybe doesn't have as much knowledge about it in the world as sort of our run-of-the-mill, if you will, simulations. But I think more and more you're going to see, if you look on our website, you can see certain simulations that have been given these enhanced feature sets to support accessibility and use by really the variety of users we have out there.
Brilliant. So let's rewind it back to the start. It's got a fantastic origin story. It's like a superhero. So can you just briefly tell us where FET came from and what does it stand for? I've occasionally tried to find what the ET, I guess the PH is physics. I've occasionally tried to find the ET and never can find it. So what's the background? How did it start?
So it started with Carl Wieman, as you may know, won a Nobel Prize at the University of Colorado for Bose-Einstein condensation with a fellow physicist, Eric Cornell. And Carl had seen at the time Java applets were sort of all the rage in around the year 2000. And there was something at the time at the University of Colorado known as the Physics 2000 website, which had a number of these applets describing more advanced physics. And Carl had seen in giving talks about Bose-Einstein condensation, using some of these kinds of visualizations, really seeing a lot more engagement and understanding from his audiences. And he had gotten more interested in the education side of physics and decided that a great use of this kind of technology might be to try to make interactive simulations for teaching undergraduate physics. So that's kind of the humble beginnings of the project. He used his Nobel Prize money, his seed money, to start this project really with a single developer who's actually a member of our team still. I went to grad school with him. Dr. Sam Reed was a PhD student in physics and was the original FET developer. I believe John Travoltage may have been one of the first simulations they worked on, which is, you know, enormously popular still with teachers around the globe. And they were really started to see the power of using these interactives with students in the classroom and the ability to explore and help explain topics. So it began as the Physics Education Technology Project. That's where the FET comes from.
I can see what they did there, yeah.
But, you know, maybe not the best branding for all time, since these days we do more than just physics. We do physics, chemistry, math, earth science, biology. And these days it's just FET in much the same way as it's NASA stands for something, but people just think of it as NASA these days.
Absolutely, it's got its own legend now. I have to say, I'm always enormously impressed with FET whenever I look at it. There's always, whenever I go and I'm looking for something new and something different, I'm always impressed by the quality of what's there. Is there anything, you know, from your point of view that you think is kind of undersold, if you like? Is there anything that you, our listeners, you know, should really look up, in your opinion, that perhaps isn't as visited as it should be, according to you?
Ooh. That is a good question. Well, I would say this, that I'll go with a yes on that. And my yes is going to be very specific, that what you'll see in the growth of FET, we started in physics, started to then move into chemistry, and especially what our director, Dr. Kathy Perkins, has done these days is we tend to choose a field or a topic and expand there. So if you've been following FET for a long time, you know, we started in undergraduate physics, we did some chemistry, and then at some point, for instance, there were some quantum mechanics simulations that were made for more advanced undergraduate physics. And these days, actually, a really big growing area for us is maths. So we have a number of simulations for younger learners, especially thinking about the ideas of algebra. So for sort of middle school students, we have a really nice number of simulations. There's a simulation called Function Builder, which is just an amazing, wonderful simulation for getting some of those ideas, fundamental ideas about functions across. We have, even going down to really elementary school students, we have a great sim called Making Tens. So math is a big growing area for us. So a lot of people know us really well for physics and chemistry. I mean, I think you're hard pressed to find a physics teacher around that uses technology in the classroom that hasn't heard of FET. But we are not as well known in the math community. So I'd say if you know a math teacher in your department, tell them, hey, FET does math as well. That's the place I would push.
Definitely. That's a push. So listener, when you're heading in today, seek out your head of maths and just point their nose in the direction of FET, because there's some great stuff there. And of course, a lot of our physics teachers here do teach a bit of maths here and there. So again, they can perhaps introduce FET to the maths department via the back door that way. So that's really good. That's good news.
And what I would say is, because that's a push for us, you will notice that many of our simulations, for instance, when we made the HTML5 conversion of projectile motion, we worked hard to support math learning goals when we were thinking about the design of that simulation. So if I'm a maths teacher, how could I think about using this to help support ideas of calculating parabolic trajectories?
Lovely. So if there's, and often this happens, I think, you know, tie-ups between the science and the maths department here, you know, trying to do something a little bit different, this is a great way to sort of mediate that. So there's some of the sims that actually cover both.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. So you mentioned the HTML5 push there, and I know that this is a thing that is must be a big part of your life at the moment, because the sims that were originally written in Java, that's not as ubiquitous a web technology as it used to be. I think that's probably a nice neutral way of saying that. But
that's a very nice way of saying that.
There's been a little bit of argy-bargy, as we say. And so everything's being migrated to HTML5. That must be a huge project for you.
Yes, absolutely. And converting the Sims to HTML5 is not just critical for people's ease of access around the world, but also for the many goals we have for FET simulations these days. We can't build in some of these accessibility features, for instance, to our Java simulations, and the ability to easily translate the simulations into different languages, the accessibility goals, some other goals we have that are a bit more obscure for our project, really require that HTML5 code base. And it's been truly an enormous project. I mean, one of the things we often point out is in Java, for any coders out there, we had about 50,000 lines of what we refer to as common code. So if we had a ruler in our simulation, instead of having a copy of that code in every simulation, we'd have one piece of code that was the ruler. So if there was a bug, some issue like that, when we build the simulations, it's getting fixed. It's the same piece of code that's being used throughout the simulations. We start HTML5 with zero lines of common code. So it's been an enormous undertaking. We've written an enormous number of custom libraries to help support what we do, which are all open source. And we even have people out there who've sort of customized or tweaked or made FetSims themselves out of the code base that we have there. But it has really been the main focus of our project. And for your listeners out there, trust us, there is nobody who wants to convert our simulations to HTML5 faster than us. So we often get people, oh, why haven't you done this one? It's like, look, we really want to, but there's a lot that goes in, even to just converting a simulation that already exists into HTML5, and doing it right is really what's the key.
Yeah, I think it is one of those things that as soon as anything like this becomes successful, everybody has a suggestion and it's almost overwhelming. And I remember Pete Edmonds was a contributor who we had on a few episodes ago, and he's made a huge wealth of resources of questions for kids to work through in class. And he says he just gets overwhelmed with loads of people saying, have you got any answers for those? So it's like you've got a similar thing with the HTML5 migrations, but there we go.
but we take teacher suggestions. To give you an example, we take teacher suggestions extraordinarily seriously. We catalog them all. And when we've been converting, you know, there may have been a sim that we really have not had time to work on when it was in Java. And we have a number of teacher suggestions. We go through all those. We go through emails. We make sure that anything that we feel can fit into the migration into HTML5. So some migrations have been easy. They've basically been taking the Java sim more or less and making it look the same and basically moving it to our HTML5 standard. But many simulations, and usually the older and more popular they are, the more suggestions they've had, the more we've learned about how to design them well, how to improve them, how to scaffold them well. And it's often a very large then design undertaking. What learning goals do we want to support? Users have had these suggestions. What can we do to better support the suggestions teachers have had out there? You know, in our DC circuit construction kit, we added a fuse, for instance. That's been a long time request of teachers. Right now, people are really begging us to put an ohmic light bulb in our circuit construction kit, and that's something we're going to work on, for instance. But there are many requests out there and many things we've learned just in general about design, user experience, user interface that we try to apply when we're migrating these.
So now would probably be a bad time to say, when are you going to do the photoelectric effect one? So I won't ask.
No, it's not. It's not actually. that's a great time to ask that question because for one, you can use the photoelectric effect right now.
Yeah.
And you can do it via this new introduction of technology we've had onto our website, which is this ChirpJ solution, where you can actually run the Java sims in a browser. They are the original Java sims, but converted to JavaScript in a way that allows them to run the web browser. It's not what we would consider an HTML5 conversion. But that one, the photoelectric effect, the cold-hearted answer is we'll wait until we have funding to do it.
Yeah, I was going to say about funding, because I guess it's a lot of work, and a lot of work means a lot of money, and you rely on, to some level, donations to help you. So if every teacher who uses FET gave you the price of a cup of coffee, would you be sorted?
If they did that every year, yes.
So buy you a coffee a year and that would be fine.
A coffee a year would sort us, I think, if all the teachers around the world that use us did that. I mean, our usage has grown enormously, and especially in these, shall we call them, interesting times. To give you a feel, In September of last year, we had about 10 million runs of simulations from our website. This year, in September, we had about 20 million runs of simulations off our website. Our use has grown enormously. When Italy was in lockdown, the use in Italy went up by about a factor of 3 compared to the year before. So especially in these times of remote learning, remote teaching, a lot of new users have come to FET. So in an interesting way, it's been, I won't call it a boon to our project, but I think a lot more educators out there have become aware of this wonderful free resource that's there for them to use.
Yeah, and I can't encourage it. Again, it's the same principle as with anybody who's contributing to the community. You know, just go on there. There's a way of contributing, I think, from the website, isn't there? There's a button on the website that people can press and just go straight through and make a donation. And presumably anything there, price of a cup of coffee or more, is welcome.
You can donate to our project through our website, but there is a minimum donation.
Ah.
We have some constraints due to the fact that we all do sit under the umbrella of a university. So I'd have to look, but it's somewhere between $10 and $20. I don't remember off the top of my head. But you cannot, unfortunately, make a true micro donation to the project. You cannot just make a $1 donation to the project at the moment. The way you can do that is by purchasing. We have an iOS app and soon to come out an Android app that will be available. And each of those are on the 99-cent level. I'm not quite sure what that transfers to in pounds/euros, whatever you're on these days, or your listeners or their currency of choice. But, you know, it's on that inexpensive level. And that's a great way to donate to our project and get right on your fingertips, right on your device, a offline access and all the time access to all of our HTML5 simulations. And people really appreciate that user experience. So that's my favorite way of making a micro donation to the project.
That's great. And to be honest, you know, and a $10 minimum donation, if that's what it turns out to be, is not a huge price to pay for such a great resource. I think that turns out current exchange rate's about £358, isn't it, Thomas? I think
something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, so that's how it works these days. Yeah.
I'm just looking at your website. I mean, in about 2 years, if it keep growing, you'll have a billion simulations delivered, won't you? A billion. That's amazing stats.
Yeah, I would say, actually, I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of this year we have that. I mean,
wow.
The usage this year, we're at around, last year we were in sort of the 130 to 140 million simulations a year delivered. And especially with some of the efforts we're making to grow our usage in developing countries, Spanish-speaking countries, etc., I expect that number to be easily in the 200 million a year.
Wow.
It's just mad, isn't it? Slightly more than we've got listeners. Slightly more. Marginal. No, it's just, it's a fantastic tool. I mean, I use the photoelectric every year, and I use the circuit one. It's just so good. When I give them a harder question that I feel they'll struggle with at home, I just say, make it in FET, and then check your answers. And that's just a super resource. Just those two. And who couldn't love John Travoltage? I think
that's got to be the most popular, right?
Yeah, it's got to be the most popular.
Actually, circuit by pure usage, Circuit Construction Kit is by far our most popular simulation.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, no, because I think the circuit construction, I was going to say, is just, it's brilliant for using in the classroom when you're actually teaching it. But when it comes around to revision, where kids can't, you know, get their hands dirty and build a circuit, you can just set them a homework where you say, go on to FET and build the series circuit and build the parallel circuit and remind yourself of how it works and remind yourself of you know, the voltage characteristics, the current characteristics, do all of that. And it turns revision from, you know, just making mind maps and posters and all the rest of it into an activity, and it's phenomenal. Anyway, I'm gushing now. So
well, so, I would make one PSA out there, though, that if I don't know if PSA is a common term where you're from, but public service announcement, that, you know, I'm an experimental physicist is my background. So are many of the people on the FET project, like our director, Kathy Perkins, or even the founder, Carl Wyman. Our desire, which sometimes we get asked a lot, is not to get rid of hands-on experimentation, right?
Mm.
We are deep believers that these simulations serve the purpose of helping to build conceptual understanding, but they are not intended as a replacement for that great hands-on learning that you can do, for instance, with real circuits. Now, in some of the situations we have at the moment, the opportunity for hands-on learning isn't there. So yes, you know, for people who don't have the equipment, it can be used, some of them, as a replacement or as a virtual lab. But our goal, if you will, is never to replace labs. It's to augment and help the conceptual learning behind labs.
You're definitely preaching to the converted here. One of the reasons we started the podcast was to champion practical physics and talk about practical work. So we're right behind you, brother. We actually have a spot on the podcast. I'll put you on the spot here, where we ask educators to tell us their favorite demo or practical they do in the lab. Now, you with your lasers might be a bit beyond the high school, but is there something you remember fondly from your days at school that was your favorite lab?
Oh, that's extremely easy for me.
Oh, go
my
on.
Favorite thing to do with students, I really have two, but my absolute favorite is to take, I have one of these really enormous rare earth magnets, and to drop it on a copper plate in front of them. And they all look at me like I'm a wizard. And then I have them come up each one by one and just really feel that. And I go, look, you are literally feeling yourself interact with the electrons in that copper plate through Faraday's law. And to me, that's one of the most visceral, amazing demonstrations, where it's nothing fancy. It's a magnet and a copper plate. And it really underpins so much of our society. You know, like, how is pretty much every type of electricity, besides when we use solar, produced, but by moving copper wires through magnetic fields, basically, right?
Beautiful.
That's brilliant. There's a fantastic demo of that at the Science Museum in London, where they've got a lump of copper as big as your arm, and the neodymium magnets as big as a matchbox, and it is just staggering. That. So, how big? I love to get the details on these. So, how big is your copper plate, and where did you find it?
Well, remember, I used to work as an instrument maker, so I had quite the nice access to large metal plates. So my copper plate's about a centimeter thick and about, I'd say about 30 centimeters by 20 centimeters wide.
Okay, that's a good chunk of copper,
isn't it? Yeah, a nice little chunk of copper. And the neodymium iron boron magnet I have it's a 250-pound pole magnet. So you have to be very careful, right? I mean, this is something that will fly out of your hand if you're near a chunk of metal and shatter. So I'm quite careful to clear the area before any students come over, make them take off their rings, et cetera. but it is, I would say, let me think, it's probably about 8 centimeters by 8 centimeters wide. And
really? Wow.
Yeah, it's...
My God. I mean, they are vicious, those things. I got some on eBay, a couple, and they were about the size of just a die that you'd roll.
Yeah.
And I took them out of the packaging, and they leapt from hand to hand and shattered. Yeah. I'd had them 10 seconds.
I wrapped this up in multiple rags, and I'm very careful with it. But it really does the demonstration nicely, because if you drop it, I mean, it just oozes down onto this copper plate in this way that... Seems to defy all the physics you've ever seen in your life.
Fantastic. That is fantastic. Now, before I forget, I was going to say, and I'm inherently a lazy person, so you may have in your head the top five simulations. Now, we know the first one is the circuits one that I use a lot. I'm guessing the other four are ones I should be using a lot too. So do you have in your head the most popular ones?
So for physics, certainly the next one to really think about is Energy Skate Park. In particular, right now we have Energy Skate Park Basics, but we will soon have our full Energy Skate Park up on the website. And that one, you know, I've used in my own teaching many times in a college class, where you can talk all you want about kinetic energy and potential energy trading back and forth on something like a ramp, but really seeing those dynamic visualizations is extraordinarily powerful for students. So that one, I think, is just really wonderful, a great visualization, very powerful for students.
I love that one because you can turn friction on and off because I always find that's the difficulty, the conceptual difficulty with a lot of things of the friction and the air resistance that slow things down and stop them. But with the skate park, you can turn friction off and you can see, you know, just going backwards and forwards forever. So you can kind of say, so you see when you have no friction here, but if I turn it back on again, you see a much more familiar story of him. Eventually he gets damped down to nothing. So yeah, lovely. I love the skate
park. Yeah, so our energy skate park is really a wonderful simulation. Near and dear to my personal heart is our Force and Motion basic simulation. If you're really just starting with younger students and introducing them to the concepts of Newton's laws, especially Newton's second law, that is just a whimsical, fun simulation to use. Even though it is on the border of, let's say, physics and chemistry, our gas property simulation is one of our most popular simulations and is really powerful for teaching the concepts behind the ideal gas law. If you're doing optics, our bending light simulation for exploring Snell's law is just superb. I mean, it's really one of the best resources out there.
It's funny, all these ones you said I have used and checked out. I was going to say, I found you've got a ripple tank now, because I've always used the online ripple tank, but you have, I don't know, the dripping taps one. That was new to me. It's probably been there 15 years, but yeah, that was new to me.
Absolutely. Oh, I'd say, so our wave interference simulation is the one you're talking about. It's really a wonderful simulation. It's kind of a spin-off version of that simulation we call Waves Intro, which really just, if you're not getting to the ideas of interference, focuses just on the idea of a water, sound, and light wave. And here's a great story. Our vector addition simulation was actually mainly produced by an absolutely brilliant high school student who just started his first year of college and is just a really talented developer, as well as our projectile motion simulation a couple years ago was produced by an incredible young woman who started working for us as a high school student and is these days at MIT. But she is the main developer of our projectile motion simulation, and both of those are really wonderful simulations for use in the classroom.
Very nice. One thing I do want to plug, and this is, we all know about this, I guess, but there's a lot more to it than just the sims. There are also teaching activities. There are, other teachers, by the looks of things, have kind of contributed worksheets and activities around the simulation. So if you really push for time and you'd like to set something from FET for homework, you'll find all sorts of, and those resources are really high quality. Presumably they've been edited, have they, Ariel, to make sure that they meet a quality threshold?
Well, let's be a little careful. Yes, there are on pretty much any page, any what we call simulation page, so if you go into some simulations, there will be a for teachers section. And students have no barrier to access to using the simulations on the website. They don't need to log in, sign in, do anything. They should just click and run them. If you want access to the teacher resources, we do put that behind a registration obligation, so registering for our website. And that's really to discourage students from using those resources and opening them up to teachers, as well as us just having a better idea of what kinds of people around the world are using our simulations for use in the classroom. But under there, you'll find a few things. You'll find a teacher tips document. So that's a PDF document that helps to explain what features and controls are in the sim, common student difficulties, what are some of the model simplifications we've made in the simulation. And then there are also a number of teacher submitted activities from our teacher community. We do not vet those for efficacy in the classroom. So there are a few things we do. We look over them, and any of those resources that meet what we'd call our inquiry standards, they're written in a guided inquiry style, we give those a gold star. So we're not vetting the quality of the activity, we're vetting that it meets those inquiry standards. There are also some activities that you will see submitted by members of the FET team. So for instance, I think years and years ago, I wrote an activity for the balancing act simulation, and you'll see that marked with a little logo of FET when you're looking in that table of submitted activities. I think in the future, we'd really like to have some sort of vote up or down, probably just vote up system of being able to have teacher community ratings of the activities. So it's a little easier for teachers to sort what's good for their classroom. But one of the things we've done recently is put a remote learning tag there. So if there are activities that are specifically written for use with students in an online or distance environment, they have that remote learning tag, and you can actually search through the activities of the entire website looking for that remote learning tag.
Superb. That is just fantastic. So lots of really great high quality resources, not just the Sims there. There are resources and they're gathered there and things to look at. So help you out with your remote lessons if you need them.
I should also mention all of those lessons are, when they're uploaded, teachers agree to our Creative Commons license. So you can not only just download those, you can download them, edit them, remix them. They're there as a free resource to use, just like the simulations. You don't have to use them as is. You can copy and paste bits from different activities that are on our website. So a lot of the use, I think, that teachers have out there is that remix and reuse of the activities.
Yeah, that's, as we come to an end, that's a wonderful part about it, that I've seen remixed simulations out there. I think that the sharing of it, the openness of it, is absolutely fantastic on top of everything else. It's not just physics now, is it? You've got about 20 biology ones. You've got earth sciences, math, you've talked about chemistry. It's just the most incredible resource. And I know you didn't want us to say this, but on behalf of our listeners, we just want to thank you so much. It's come up so often in the podcast. It's just a wonderful resource.
Yep, absolutely.
And as I told you when we were in communication before, for us, that's a symbiotic relationship. You know, this project is meaningless without all the dedicated educators out there that are on the front lines, teaching students in the classroom, teaching students via Zoom as they are these days, or whatever their online way might be. That's what makes the project meaningful. That's what gives it its power, is that we've made a flexible product that can be used by all these wonderful educators out there in the ways that fit their classroom needs the best.
Well, I think that's a lovely way to end it. And you know, thank you so much, Ariel. It's been an absolute pleasure. Keep up the good work. We love FET, and good luck on your way to a billion.
Yeah, absolutely. And happy to be a guest on your podcast at another time if you have more questions about the FET project, or if we can dive more deeply into some of the pedagogy behind these sims.
That would be a great pleasure. Thank you. So we listened to that as we were walking along, and we're now walking along 2 meters apart. We'll be passing Albert Einstein between us. So, what a pleasure to listen to Ariel and the wonderful stuff they're doing at FET.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really fabulous stuff. And of course, we should mention that they've just launched, and they really need your support on the Android app that they've just launched. I think it cost a princely sum of about 89p, so well worth it for you and your students if you can download it on your phones or your tablets or whatever. And you can find that on the Play Store.
You can indeed. And that 89p will buy you all their HTML5 simulations. And if we get enough people doing it, enough people buying it, so encourage your kids to buy it, they can then convert to HTML5 that works in the app, the fantastic photoelectric demo, which is it is my favourite. I use it every year. So yeah, splash out 89p, or if you're feeling richer, the university ties them down to a bit more, doesn't it? But you can donate through the website a little bit more if you're feeling generous.
Yeah, I think it's something like, I mean, it's a $10 minimum donation, but nothing too ridiculous. So if you fancy kicking into the fun for that, that would be great. And as I said before, it's just been such a boon during lockdown. I was going to ask, have you got a favourite? You said photoelectric effect, but is there any one that you particularly love?
Yeah, well, obviously, my favourite is the electric circuits after photoelectric effect. And I think the electric circuits is fabulous for backing up practical work. I think, as Ariel says, it really is a support for practical work. But I find it brilliant to support questions. So if I set a harder question for them to solve in a circuit, they can check just by building the circuit. And I think that's a really powerful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I said it for revision quite a lot for the same reason, that basically, you know, if there's a particularly hard exam question that they've struggled to engage with, I said, well, go and put that circuit together in FET and see what happens. And of course, they can do that as part of their revision from home without having to have access to circuit trays and all the rest.
Yeah, so FET is just the most wonderful tool.
use it to back up practical work rather than replace it. Obviously, it's going to be challenging if we go into a firmer lockdown in the UK. In the UK, they've kept all the schools open, but everyone else is pretty locked down, hence us passing Einstein from one to the other. So it's just a wonderful tool. Any other business, Robin? Because that was quite a long interview.
Oh, yeah, just to say that we had a lovely email this week from Sophie Constantine. Thank you, Sophie. And she explained to us why it is that you don't get radioactive Brazil nuts. Why do you, as I say, why do you not get radioactive Brazil nuts?
Well, I did read the email too, so I know the answer, but we'll let the listener have a think. It's because they're generally not from Brazil, Robin.
It seems sort of slightly wrong, doesn't it? I think Brazil are being cheated there. But apparently the soil in Brazil is particularly radioactive because of the geology of the soil in Brazil. And so if you grow them elsewhere, they don't get so much radioactivity in them.
Which is a nice, simple solution. She also shared a really good video on YouTube, we'll put in the show notes, that goes through everyday objects and how radioactive you think they are. Some surprising ones there, including where nuclear waste goes. Although I was pretty confident in that he wasn't talking about high-level waste.
I'm glad to hear it and somewhat alarmed now, but I'm sure we'll all become revealed in the show notes. As always, if you want to get in touch, give us a shout, contact@thephysicsteachingpodcast.com.
Or you can go to our website where there's a contact form on every page, the.physicsteachingpodcast.com. We also had a lovely tweet this very day from Michael Kerslake modelling the finest beautiful T-shirt I've seen in a long while, Robin. A beautiful green one that said, "I'm a physics teacher, of course I have charm."
Yes, which, you know, as jokes go, is fabulous. And
you're supposed to be selling this.
Yeah, sorry, which is a fabulous pun, hilarious, and I can barely speak for holding in the laughter. But if you want similarly fantastically good puns about your physics teaching prowess, then please do head to the website. It's the.physicsteachingpodcast.com/shop.
And if you have any puns you wish to share with us and for us to put on T-shirts, you can always tweet at us @physicstp or get in contact through Instagram @physics_teaching_podcast. Or if you want to go for the holy grail and ask a question using your very own voice, you can email us an audio file or send us a voice message on WhatsApp or Telegram. The number is in our Twitter profile.
Right, and I think that should be it for the week, because there's people coming and I don't want to look like an idiot talking to an Albert Einstein head in the middle of a field.
That's exactly what I was thinking. So we'll sign off there. Thank you very much, Robin.
See you next week, Thomas. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Physics Teaching Podcast, and special thanks this week to Ariel Poole. The podcast is presented in the middle of a muddy field by Robin Griffiths and me, Thomas W.P., and produced and edited by me, Thomas W.P., with Robin doing the show notes. Thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.